This is for the men who never settle. The ones who believe only quitters end a game in a tie. The type of guys who choose the bar with the biggest TVs to overcompensate for theirs at home. This is the Lodge mentality. This is Twin Peaks.
What happened last night? This is Sports Sunday with Joshua Briscoe on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Good morning. Happy Father's Day to all, even the haters and losers. It's the best tweet ever for this day. It just scrolled across my timeline. It's an old Donald Trump tweet from 2013 that really sums up exactly how I feel today. Happy Father's Day to all, even the haters and losers. This is Sports Sunday. Ideally, that'll be the last time we talk politics on the show. Don't worry about it. Don't hyperventilate. We're not doing that today. But that just showed up, and it felt very topical. So I figured, you know what? I want to wish a happy Father's Day to everyone, even the haters and losers. And if that upsets you, then you're a hater or a loser, clearly. Now, on today's show, we have a huge laundry list of things that have happened this week. A ton of things going on currently, and then something that happened last night. It's going to be hard to start anywhere other than with your Kansas City Royals. And I'm sorry for that. I've been at pretty much the same place with the Royals for about 2 months now. This last week was great. A six-game West Coast winning streak gives you a lot of hope. It gives you a lot of fun baseball. No complaints there. All of the power from those few games gives you some genuine hope because, well, with all the things the Royals are average at, if all of a sudden you could bet on a couple of homers a game, then everything changes. But last night, everything inverted against the Angels. The Angels ended up with three home runs of their own. The Royals could not score a run. In fact, the first pitch of the game for the Angels was enough to outscore the Royals over nine innings. The Angels needed one pitch to outscore your boys in powder blue because of these Father's Day uniforms. We're going to talk about like some other uniform stuff later on, some things that the Major League Baseball is doing with players weekend or whatever. We'll get to that later. Of all these theme uniforms, though, these are my favorite, at least for the Royals. I like the powder blue and gray. It's kind of nice. I don't need that all the time. In fact, I don't really even need it the day before Father's Day. Wearing it today seems like that makes sense. It's all a marketing ploy, though, along with capitalism. Major League Baseball is not a charity. The stuff you buy from them goes to the owners. If you want to support whatever, like prostate cancer research, you donate money to an actual charity. If you want the blue hat, buy the blue hat, by all means. But the Royals last night came falling back to earth, maybe only for a game. Maybe this is just a blip on the radar. Maybe they're going to win, I don't know, a dozen out of a 13-game stretch. Maybe this is just the break in the middle of two six-game winning streaks. Really, what I think they are, though, is a 500 baseball team. I've been saying that since literally before the season. Like the day before the season. The Sunday before the season started. Put my flag, and this looks like a team that does a lot of things pretty well. Some things not so great. Most things averagely. Nothing incredibly well. Nothing terrible. And last night was an example of that. It was an example of the dark side of being a team that struggles at a bunch of things. The pitching was a mess. Jake Junis went out and he pitched five and a third. He gave up eight hits, five earned runs. Then Chris Young came in for his inning and two thirds. Gave up four earned runs of his own. That's how you get a 9-0 game. Now, Jake Junis has, you know, potential and things to work out and blah, blah, blah. I don't know how you can consider yourself a contending baseball team if you ever put Chris Young out there. Now, listen. 2 weeks ago, you would have said, dude, you could let bring Jorge Soler back up and let him pitch. It doesn't matter. You're down 5-0 in the fifth inning, in the sixth inning. Anybody could finish this game. It doesn't matter. The Royals aren't going to score five runs in the next few innings. It's simply not going to happen. But that has not been true for the last week. For the last week, the Royals have been capable of scoring five or six runs in the eighth inning. So, ever bothering with Chris Young at this point, it just seems like a white flag. His role on this team is to finish out games that you have too much pride to forfeit. So, I don't understand how you can consider yourself a contender and even bother with Chris Young. The Royals threw in the towel after those five and a third relatively disastrous innings from Jake Junis. But that's not really the thing from last night that concerns me. The thing that concerns me from last night is actually the lineup. It's the hitting performance. Because that's been so good, so consistently, for a whole team to have a quote unquote off night does worry me a little bit. I mean, they got two hit, not just there's no two hit wit. It's a two hit team last night. Going up against nothing special from the Angels. And they had three base runners all night. They had the two hits and a walk. And listen, I'm willing to go, yeah, that's an off night. That's a bad game. Whatever. But we're at a point with the Royals where every game leading up to the trade deadline is so important. And also, we're at a point with the Royals where we are all openly, willingly, totally overblowing everything that happens. If you want to put it in terms of the NFL, because that's the way that I think best in sports, you put together a 10-game stretch, it's the equivalent of one NFL game. The Royals had their 6-game winning streak here. They lost last night, 7, 2 losses before that, and a win. They're 7-3 in this 10-game stretch. Come out on top. Pick up a few games. You win that 10th of the season. And the Royals are only 3.5 games back of the division right now. The Royals and Tigers are both 3.5 games back of Cleveland, who, I mean, I'm not saying that I was the only one saying this, but I told you this was going to happen. Cleveland's going to take this division. And Detroit and Kansas City both at the 3.5, both behind Minnesota by 2.5 games. So the Royals are still sitting tied for third in the AL Central. And they're only a game in front of the White Sox. The whole division is a quagmire, which makes it interesting. But this is where this all gets so much more complicated and so much more important and so much more frustrating. The stakes this year are so high. This isn't like last year, even, whenever we were all kind of, you know, oh, they're kicking around 500. You know, maybe they win a few games in a row. We talk about a little bit of a streak. Maybe they stretch up and try to grab at the heels of the second wild card spot. You could do that last year without any consequences for not selling. The Royals didn't have real pressure last year. Last year, the Royals just went out, did what they could, weren't good enough. That's the entire story of last year. They played 162. They won half of them. That's not good enough. Get some fun games. Got some clunkers. Got no playoffs. And that's okay. It's okay to have a season that can be summed up concisely. That's all right. There's no great shame in that. But this year is not even close to that clean. This season is not going to be able to be summarized in 3 or 4 words, or even 3 or 4 sentences. Because this year, there are huge stakes for the future. The decisions made leading up to the trade deadline will impact this franchise for years. And not 2 or 3 years. 5 to 10. Because on July 31st, about a month and a half from now, you've made your bed if you're the Royals. That's the trade deadline, July 31st. And they've got a lot of pieces that aren't going to be back on this team next year, one way or another. If they end up holding on to Mike Moustakas and paying him and building around him as a cornerstone of this team, that is fine by me. I've been saying that for 2 or 3 years now, before it was a sexy thing to say. Charlie currently shaking his head as if that's not a sexy thing to say. Shame on you. It's very sexy. Not as sexy as a CD sex cue bar. But it's close. Not as sexy as all of the Mustangs and the Cane Bangs and the Gordongs. Last night there were none of those, though. Not a sexy game last night. Barely any contact made last night. Pick a guy to build around. Should be Moustakas. Pick a guy to build around. That's fine. And you want to say, all right, we have this core of Duffy, Salvi, and Moose. Duffy, Salvi, Moosey. Try to keep all of those nicknames in line. Fine. That's fine. But if the Royals decide that by the end of July, they're just going to go with it, then they've got to be making some extremely interesting gambles. They're not bringing back Hosmer or Kane. And if you're going to sell pieces, Kelvin Herrera's value is going to decrease with time because teams want club control. And they've got it for an extra year with Herrera. Jason Vargas is valuable to a contending team. And so this is the question that I'm genuinely interested in getting your answer to. What would be worth not selling? If you could determine the future now, you could say, you know what? You give me an AL Central pennant. We'll rebuild some other way. Try to pay Moose and Kane and Hosmer or Walk. You keep Herrera for one more year until he walks, or you sell him next year. Is that worth it to you? Because it's not to me. Because I think at this point in Kansas City, we shouldn't say, the AL Central, that's worth making the franchise worse for the next half decade. It shouldn't be worth it. You've seen the mountaintop. You've been atop it. You get an AL championship and a world championship in back to back years. We're not very far out from that. And I think that you as a Royals fan will remember the parade. Remember the World Series celebrations. That's the goal. You don't have a parade for winning the AL Central and losing in the first round of the playoffs. And now listen, of course, yes, you get in the playoffs and anything can happen. But this team is still below 500. And by my estimation, not only are they gonna the Royals going to have to heat up to get to 500 and then to get up in the division, they're going to have to heat up more than the Indians do. Because I think Cleveland, if they buy or not, it doesn't matter. It would help, but they don't need to bring in other pieces to remember that they're the best team in this division. That's going to happen. They've finally gotten back atop the AL Central. And I think that lead's only going to increase over the rest of the division. Now, the Royals right now are the hottest team maybe in the American League. That six-game stretch was pretty great. You've got good performance from your starters. Your bullpen's holding it together. Your hitting is tremendous. You can sell that. I'll watch that. I'll buy into that. But this isn't your average season of being able to just sit back and go along for the ride. Dayton Moore can't do that. So I feel like Royals fans can't do that either. And maybe you can better than I can. Maybe you can say, you know what? Maybe they will sell. But I'm just going to sit back and enjoy what's going on now. And if that's you, that's awesome. Congratulations. Glad you're having a good time. As I look at it, as I see the Royals have these hot stretches, as I see them get closer to 500, as I see the division getting even tighter, as I see their race for the wild card spot tightening up a little bit, I see us inching closer and closer to one of two things happening. Either Dayton Moore sells these pieces and builds for the future and disappoints a bunch of fans who think that the Royals have a chance to contend, or Dayton Moore keeps everybody, tries to make a run, and disappoints a whole bunch of fans that want to build for the future. So Dayton Moore is in an unenviable position right now. And maybe whenever Duffy comes back and you add a real ace back to this rotation, maybe you think then that you've actually added a piece at the deadline, essentially. Maybe you say, you know, that's a big interjection in our roster. It would be. If the Royals can get back to 500 without Danny Duffy, then you bring Duffy back. You don't have to explain to me why that makes the team better or why that makes you feel good. I get it. I'm with you. But this team is inconsistent. It's been inconsistent all year. The reason they're 500 is because they have really good stretches and really bad stretches. It's just kind of what they're made of. And I was really hoping they would win last night so we could come out here today and just say, all right, they've won 7 in a row. You know, what are your odds? Let's do odds makers. Percent chance that the Royals make the playoffs. 75. This division's garbage. Royals are hot. But because of the way that baseball has been reactionary this year, I feel like we're actually having the conversation today. I'm like, is this the beginning of a 6-game losing streak? Is this the end? Is Kane going to get traded tomorrow? And I think one of the reasons, by the way, that we're doing this super overreactionary thing is because we know what's going on behind the scenes, and it's stressful. And what the Royals end up doing by the deadline entirely hinges, in my opinion, on two things. And I'm going to call and we'll take calls after the break at 913-3810-810, 913-3810-810. I think it hinges on two things. The moves the Royals do or do not make depend on what you think this team is capable of and if you're satisfied with that. Whatever the answer to number one is, whatever you think they're capable of, if that amount of success satisfies you or not. Those are the two factors here. Excuse me. For me, my two answers are, I think this team is capable of scratching above 500. Maybe just kind of nipping at the heels of Cleveland. In a best case scenario, maybe they get a sniff of the AL Central. And for me, even winning the division, for me, the getting to the AL Championship Series and losing, that's not enough. Is getting to the World Series enough to keep everybody together? Sure. Even if you know it's going to end there. That sounds like fun. That was fun the first time. Is getting the ALCS worth it? Maybe. But I don't even know how you can become that optimistic. The answer to your first question, if the answer to the first question for you is, I think they're capable of getting to the World Series again, that's fine. Then yes, then sure, then keep everybody. Take one more run at it. But keep in mind that right now, this team is 32-35. Sneaking up on the halfway mark of the season, and they're below 500. I think they're capable of maybe getting in the conversation for the division. And that's not enough for me. 913-3810-810. Whenever we come back, we'll maybe talk about something that doesn't sound so much like we're having a wake. Good God. I mean, it was a 6-game winning streak. Did I just kill a franchise that went 6-1 over the last 7 games? They're a 500 team. They're inconsistent. Good games and bad games. Just more fun whenever they're Mustangs, Gordongs, and Kangbangs.
This is Sports Sunday with Joshua Briscoe.
Yeah, one last thing, and then I'll listen up the air. Just want to wish a happy birthday to all the dads out there.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
It's the greatest sign-off to a call, probably in the station's history. When your friend and mine, guest of the show of mine, Scott Jason, called in. Ended his call last Father's Day with, I just want to say happy birthday to all the dads out there. It's brilliant. So yes, happy Father's Day, happy birthday to all the dads out there who all collectively had their birthdays moved to this day, I guess. It's amazing. The NBA draft is on Thursday. It's been pretty interesting. In fact, the most interesting thing that happened broke last night or this morning. I think it was last night that the Sixers and the Celtics have agreed in principle to swap first round picks. The Celtics dropped down from number 1 to number 3. The Sixers, obviously, vice versa. Jumping the Lakers, who are at number 2, the Suns are at 4. And first of all, the Sixers are officially America's team. Joel Embiid posted a picture on Instagram. Markel Fultz commented, trust the process. It's all, that team is perfect. But what the Sixers have actually done, I think, is super interesting in just in like a macro sports conversation. Something I feel like I talk about every couple of weeks is the idea of settling for mediocrity versus bottoming out. Taking big swings when you shouldn't. Like there are three point guards in this draft that are very highly touted. Fultz, Lonzo Ball, and De'Aaron Fox out of Kentucky. I'm looking at a mock draft from CBSSports.com that has De'Aaron Fox going second to the Lakers now for whatever reason. I'm not putting any actual weight in that right now. But those are the guys. And for all of the conversation throughout the college basketball season and through all of the conversation all the way up through the combine and workouts, basically until like yesterday, it was Fultz 1, Ball 2, probably Josh Jackson out of Kansas 3, the Celtics. And then the Suns would get stuck with another bleeping point guard from Kentucky. The Suns are my most hopeless fandom. Like, I got like a little bit of Steve Nash losing in the playoffs, and that's been the highlight of my experience with this team. They just draft guards from Kentucky now. Anyway, I'm not gonna spend this segment complaining about the Suns, but every time I think about that, I just get sad. Although this draft has them taking Lonzo Ball, which would be awesome. I would genuinely love that. I don't know what that says about me as a sports fan and a person, that I hope my team ends up with the entire Ball family. Give me all of them. The Suns are picking 4th. Charlie asked, not on the air for some reason. Thank you, Charlie. Charlie Carlin on the other side of the glass today. You can use your microphone. It's okay. I hosted Sports Night on Friday night, and Beards chimed in a couple of times. And he had bad contributions, so I sent him back to his kennel that we keep in the back of the studio over there. And it's not like a big kennel. It's not like a giant. It's not a St. Bernard kennel. It's like a
it's big
average,
enough for beers, though.
It's an average size, like, golden retriever kennel.
Yeah.
Which is enough for Beards. You're going to get cramped.
Probably.
But you also haven't had to go to the kennel yet. So
no.
You are allowed to use the microphone. And also, I think Beards actually made a mess in the kennel that
I was gonna say something smells back here.
You're gonna have to just sit in. Sit, I said. Sit.
Well, I'm not going to the kennel today.
Okay, just good contributions then.
Yes.
But if that makes you afraid of the microphone, then you go anyway. It's got to be a good balance. It's tough, man. It's tough. You are in a difficult position where you have to have good contributions, not just no contributions. Anyway. What the Sixers have done over the last several years is simply get high picks, take the best player, worry about the details later. Most recently, they ended up with Joel Embiid at 3, Ben Simmons at 1, and now they've traded up for Markel Fultz at 1. And that's pretty incredible. Now, Joel Embiid missed his entire, what would have been his rookie season. Ben Simmons did too. Joel Embiid has had injury issues constantly. But I can't remember who tweeted this, but someone said, if you put injury out of the conversation for a little bit, the Sixers have ended up with the most talented player in 3 straight drafts after they end up taking Markel Fultz. And they're not super conscious of position, and they've been trading, they've been trading guys in and out constantly. Actually, I skipped Jahlil Okafor in 2015. That's how long Joel Embiid has been hurt. Good Lord. I just erased a season. Because since they really bottomed out, they ended up with Michael Carter-Williams in 2013 with the 11th pick, and then Embiid at 3, Okafor at 3, Simmons at 1, and now Fultz at 1. And to get those picks, whenever they got guys that end up playing too well, they shipped them right out and said, nope, we're not winning yet. We are bottoming out, and we are going to bring in as much talent as we can possibly find. Find? I ate the last, like, syllable on that. I don't know what happened there. I think I have apple pie yogurt stuck in my esophagus. Actually, I haven't opened it yet. It seems delicious, but I haven't gotten to try it because I'm talking instead of eating, which makes sense. The Sixers have bottomed out and now put together a really talented roster and now continue to say, we're willing to spend future picks. I think they're giving up next year's. They own the first round pick of the Lakers next year that they're giving up in this trade, allegedly. It hasn't been finalized, but apparently it's been agreed on in principle. And they're saying, we've identified the best players. We know the guys that we want. We know the guys that we can work with. We're living in kind of a almost post-position NBA in a lot of ways. Now, to do that, you have to be a transcendent talent. LeBron can literally play any position on the floor, but he's LeBron. But Joel Embiid developed a shot last year before he got hurt again. I'm very interested in what the Sixers have been doing. And the whole, like, trust the process thing didn't really work out because they cleaned up the front office. But I think we're going to see very, very soon the merits of kind of going about building an NBA team in a backwards way. Because you can tell me now who you think has a better chance of being a contender in 3 years, the Sixers or any team in the middle. Any team that's not one of the top four teams in basketball. And they eventually say, you know what, I'll take a lottery ticket on the Sixers. They devoted themselves to completely rebuilding. Now, with the way you rebuild from sport to sport changes enormously. You can't pick first in the MLB draft 3 years in a row and then become a contender a year or two later. It's a whole other animal, obviously. The way you rebuild in the NFL, you've got to get a quarterback and then weapons around him and keep him standing, and then you have to build a defense that works. The order of operations can move around a little bit, but you've got to have those things. You got to have a quarterback and you got to keep him up. The Raiders rebuild seemed to happen pretty quickly. They had good pieces and they added Derek Carr. Tennessee Titans went and got Marcus Mariota and then started building around him. They're moving in the right direction. Rebuilding is different from sport to sport. But the devotion to it, I think, is the fascinating part. Like right now, in football, we're seeing a little bit of this. The New York Jets are systematically cutting all of their good players. They're just lopping off guys who might accidentally win them a game or two. And Todd Bowles is going to get fired at the end of the season. It's not really his fault because he has no players. And then they're going to try to rebuild. They're going to try to stockpile for a couple of years and then pull all those pieces together. The Browns, Charlie looked this up. I didn't need the exact number. I think the Browns had 45 draft picks this year. Or like a dozen or something. And the Chiefs had a ton also. The Chiefs used those picks to trade up and get more top caliber guys. The Browns traded up a couple times. Got Myles Garrett at one. DeShone Kizer in the second round. Makes the rebuild look like it's moving pretty quickly. And this is where I come back with the Royals. Where again, this connects, you can find examples of this from sport to sport to sport in different ways, but with the same mindset. If you find me an average team and try to work your way around an explanation for how they can become an actual contender, it's really hard. You have to either add transformative pieces or rebuild, because that's the easiest way to add transformative pieces. Like, the Chiefs have been the best of the mediocre, or the worst of the actual contenders, however you want to frame that, in the AFC for the last couple of years. Very, very clearly below the Patriots and Steelers. That you can set up that next tier however you want, with the Chiefs and the Raiders. The post-Manning Broncos are a step below, but obviously the Broncos with Peyton Manning won a Super Bowl. You have to add transformative players to change your fate. And to do that, being bad usually works. That's why sports are so much fun. Parity. Now, in baseball, that's not the case. In baseball, the easiest way to add transformative players is to just buy them. But if you're the Royals, that's not an option. So to add transformative players, you look around the league. You say, all right, well, let's check out these farm systems. These farm systems from all around. Who are the guys currently rising to the top? Who are the guys that look like they could become a transformative piece of a franchise? And then how do we get them? How do I bring them in? Royals have the answer. They got three guys who aren't going to be here next year. Or at least two of those aren't going to be here next year. Those are the pieces you send off. Those are the transformative pieces that you send away to have transformative pieces for the future. And if you have some growing pains with Raul Mondesi at shortstop, so be it. That's how it works. The way the Chiefs are doing it is they tried to build up a contender that, again, just simply fell short. And now with cutting Jeremy Maclin for cap space and then this year's draft, drafting Tano Passanio, who's probably not going to be a huge piece until next year, but is going to matter this season, similarly to Chris Jones. And then obviously trading up to get Patrick Mahomes. That's for the future. That is selling important pieces, draft picks in the NFL, which are so valuable, to go get guys who you think are going to become transformational. That's why Patrick Mahomes was so expensive. That's why the Chiefs paid the premium. Because they said, you add that guy to this framework we currently have, we fill it in once we have more cap space to play around with. Then you've got a transformative player and the pieces to work with him. But it can be hard to say, all right, we'll give up those draft picks if you're the Sixers or the Chiefs. It can be hard to say, we'll let Hosmer go. It's difficult. Sometimes it's necessary, though. 913-3810-810 if you want to call in and talk about it. Go to the phones now. Ron, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm doing great. What's on your mind?
Well, you know, they got us used to winning baseball around here, and they put together a group of guys that know how to win, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And for years, we were nothing but a farm club for all the other major leagues.
Right.
It just didn't feel good.
No.
You know, I don't know how many good ballplayers came through here, and they always use this money thing that they can't afford it. You know, we have an owner that is 10 times his investment in 17 years. And that's not even counting the profit on a cash flow he makes on an annual basis. That's only counting the asset growth. So I guess my point is, how good does it have to get before you quit talking about money? If that's not good enough, how many people would trade positions with him, be very happy with that, pay this money, get these good guys, and there's no reason in the world, well, we can't build a tradition here. He's making tons of money to get it done. So anybody wants to believe he's not making money, just go look up Forbes. They'll show you exactly how well he's doing. The man has 10 times his investment in 17 years. I'll listen off the air.
Ron, thanks for the call. That's something that we've been talking about collectively here for a long time, and I think especially in the afterglow of a couple of World Series appearances and one victory, that's totally fine. You can have that discussion. I'm working within the framework of what we know David Glass is willing to do. That's next level, though. Yeah, sure. It would seem like the profit margins on World Series championship t-shirts would be enough to fund a couple of years of a Mike Moustakas contract. I think that frustration's completely reasonable. However, it seems like David Glass, if he doesn't have a financial limitation, which I'm sure is arguable on either side of it, if he doesn't have a financial limitation making these decisions for him, these budgetary decisions, then he has a personal philosophy that we all sit around and watch. And this, they paid Salvi twice, really. They paid Danny Duffy. You get yourself in a bad place. Even the Yankees had a couple of years. Now they're like down years, are not exactly relatable in Kansas City. But the Yankees had a couple of years when they were trying to, you know, they had to get away from the A-Rod contract and Mark Teixeira's contract and all of this big money they'd been doling out, where they sort of tightened their budget a couple of belt notches and said, all right, we got to reset here. They got out of control, got a little nuts, let's pull this back together, and then now they're good again because of the pieces they brought in. Value and club control are huge in every sport. But to say, you know, hey, Glass ought to be spending out the wazoo, which is a real phrase. He ought to be spending recklessly and just keep everybody around and then, you know, and then bring in a guy or two in addition to all of the Canes and Mooses and Hosmers. Bring in another piece. Bring in a shortstop who can play now. They paid Alex Gordon, and now we're all sitting around the table drinking whatever it is that you use to numb the pain of watching Alex Gordon bat most of the time. Going, man, can you believe what they gave Alex Gordon? God, what, like $72 million? When was it? 75? Oh, boy. Can you imagine having that money back? Because for whatever amount of David Glass's budget is a choice of philosophy, he can point to the Alex Gordon contract now and say, see, that's what happens when we're not discerning enough. Not that he should get a free pass for that. What the Royals chose to do with their stars, more choice. That was a choice. They said, we're gonna make Gordon a priority right now. And now most of us wish they wouldn't have. Remember when we're talking about maybe a Ben Zobrist contract for a little bit? Remember those days? That would have made a lot of sense. Play second or outfield, give you some flexibility, great hitter. That was the one for me that was kind of hard to swallow, because it got to the point of injury. Like, well, the Cubs just like where we wanted to be, and they had the money. And the Royals weren't really playing with fire. It's difficult. And I think having a little bit of frustration with the Royals' apparently self-limiting cap philosophies. Not cap philosophies, just spending philosophies. There is no cap. The cap that they put on themselves, it's frustrating. But the most frustrating thing about it is probably there's no working around it. There's no changing that. There's no breaking the cycle. 913-3810-810. We'll talk about it more whenever we come back. This is Sports Sunday.
This is Sports Sunday with Joshua Briscoe on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Welcome back to the show. Sports Sunday here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. I just put out a poll on Twitter at JB Briscoe, and if Charlie wants to stay out of the kennel, he'll retweet it from the 810 account here very, very shortly. Like right now, Charlie. Go hit the retweet button. You have to go sit in the Yorkie-sized kennel.
I'll go set up my bed now.
Yeah, please do. I just put out a poll. I said, if you knew that the Royals would win the AL Central and nothing more in the playoffs, what would you do at the trade deadline? Sell and rebuild? Rebuild. It's not a word at all. Sell and rebuild, or take the division. That is an optimistic outlook, I think, for a team that's below 500 and is looking up at the team who was just in the World Series last year. Cleveland is going to remember who they are. They're currently doing it as they get back to the top of the division, passing up the Twins. I had a listener tweet me again at JB Briscoe. You can follow me on Twitter. I just have about 1,000 followers. I'd love to triple that today. I had a listener tweet and say the Royals could win the division, but could they actually go anywhere in the playoffs? I don't think so. So rebuilding is a smart move. And that's something that we all have to choose for ourselves here. What is worth rebuilding without the assets you could get for Moose, Hosmer, Kane, Herrera, Vargas? One way or another, you're going to have to rebuild. Depends on if you want to do it with an advantage now. Whenever we come back, we're going to talk about the Chiefs, Roger Goodell, Jeremy Maclin. We're going to have a Chiefs hour at 10.